hopefully by now you've got narrowed down a little bit on at least what the problems are. How many of you need a little more time? Let me know here. How much more time you need? 2-3 minutes or 10 minutes? Because we've got to rock and roll here pretty quick. When we were putting this together, we said if we had a little more time, we'd auction these bulls off and we'd find out which ones were the best. And we don't have enough time to get all that done. Yes. That's the EPD for the number of for how long the daughters will stay in the herd. Let's go ahead and try to find out what you think some of the problems are, and how that as you analyze this second case, and we're gonna pick on some of you to get some involvement here. Hopefully you had enough time to at least utilize the scoring sheet a little bit. And I know that probably takes a little bit of time to get all of this done and look through the case. Dick, for lack of anybody else, I'm going to pick on you because you're right next to this mic. What did you think one of the number one problems were as you looked at this particular case study and something they might want to work on?
We thought one of the bigger problems was their calving season. It's gotten out of control.
Their calving season had got out of control, so they need to shore up the calving distribution then. Is that kind of what you came up with? Okay. Anybody else? Who else had some things that they thought were pretty important? Don't be bashful, because as you found out, we got a lot of different opinions on this, and there's no right answer. Yep, go right ahead.
Losing too many cows, 40% replacement rate, stability's got to be a problem in that herd.
Okay. Stability is a problem because the replacement rate is too high. And too many opens. All right. Say again. Here. You. Says he's got to have some carcass data. You mean for bulls to improve, you mean? They've got a lot of carcass data on the cattle. Hey, you got to get on a mic here if you're going to say something. I'm tied up, but I'll give him that mic.
The daily gain is way too low.
The daily gain, say again on the carcass data?
The daily gain is way too low. On
and
the
comment on the carcass data?
Got to have more carcass data.
Got to have more carcass data. We've got 5 years here. Oh, you mean it needs to be improved?
Right.
Ah, okay, all right. I mean, you got to have more data. I'm going, oh, my goodness. Yeah, you might want more data, and he probably has more data than this. You got to summarize it and give it into so it fits on 3 pages, too. So he says we need a little more growth and some improvement in carcass. By improvement in carcass, in what area? He's got to get the percent choice and primes up. Anybody else have a problem that they'd like to address? Yep, John, hang on. Where's that traveling one? Darren, get your butt up off there and help me now. God damn, I got a bunch of loafers up here.
If these calves are creeped for 120 days, which we found out in the scenario somewhere, a 540-pound weaning weight isn't that good if they're creeped for that long.
Okay.
I had a question on carcass data. I think there'd be a lot of people would be pretty happy with 76% choice and above. I'm thinking we're being a little critical on that carcass.
Okay.
The point was they're not yielding very well, and the comment was that's more important, quality. Yes, sir. I'm just quoting.
Describe yield. Are you talking dressing percent or are you talking?
No,
yield grade? What are you, huh?
They're not yield grading very well.
Okay, that I can relate to that. All right. They had less than 1% yield grade fours. Is that bad?
That's a good part of it.
Yeah, I'd say, Bob. What? Yeah, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, as I look at it, you know, yeah, we always want to be better, but that I don't think that's a terrible problem in this herd with sitting there at 36.5% yield grade threes and less than 1% on yield grade fours. I don't think that's too bad over a 5-year track period. Yes, sir. Dave.
Dr. Sherman, Dr. Stuckey, of course, he's just a veterinarian, but as we evaluated the scenario, we thought his greatest, or his biggest problem, concern was the average daily gain in feed efficiency. The feed efficiency over a 5-year average is just a tick under 7-1. And if you look at the factors influencing profitability in the cattle feeding phase, that's a major, major factor and probably overrides any premium from the carcass quality.
Okay.
He's got to sell them for more money.
Got to sell them for more money. Man, I've heard that a few times before. Smoking like a true cattleman. That's good. Yeah, go ahead.
I think this might help the daily gain and the feed conversion, but he's got to select for more carcass weight. He's got to sell more pounds. You know, you back figure off a 63% dress, his cattle only average 1,100 pounds at market.
Okay, did y'all hear that? Okay. Yeah, Reuben? Well, that's a good question. The question is, what was his cost to gain? And that we don't have that. I tell you we do, but I took it out of the situation. When we developed these 3 years ago with these producers, I had the SPA data and all of that. And when we were putting these together, we said, hey, you know, you gotta tone it down, because the fact sheet for this individual herd was 6 pages, Reuben. You know, with all of that, and with an hour and a half, it's hard to put it all in there. So we tried to simplify it down. His cost of gain wasn't bad, though, I can tell you that. With an under 7-1 conversion, it wasn't that bad. Okay, anybody else? Yeah.
I have a question about the feed efficiency.
Question about the feed efficiency.
Sure. Question about the feed efficiency was that the average was 7 or something, or below 7, but the trend is going the wrong way.
The trend is going the wrong way.
The experienced people, how do you look at it? Do you look at the average, or do you look at the trend and try to protect that graph?
Well, you have to take in, this is opinion, you know, we all got opinion, you know, but we also need to confer that and relate to the environment, what kind of feeding conditions we were under as to how that's going to impact it all. But yeah, we'd sure like to be going the other way. Comment over here.
Well, in our little corner of the world over here,
okay,
we got to believe that all that carcass status, that's good information. You always want to improve that, but if you don't get these cows bred and tighten up the calving interval, all of that's a waste of discussion. He's below average in all of his breeding program, and he's really only average in his weaning weights if you factor in the pre-feeding program. And he can solve the weaning weight problem by getting cows bred earlier.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I think he needs to do first, is get his cows bred.
I guess the only comment I'd make on the weaning weight thing, I don't disagree with you on the reproduction. Keep in mind, this producer is weaning calves early. He is weaning them at about 5.5 months of age to 6 months, because he's wanting to get them into the feedlot on feed so he can market by the time they're at that 13-month mark, to beat the markets, if you will, from going down. So that might be a part of why his weaning weights aren't quite as high.
Darrell, another comment about the weaning weights and then also the percent bred. In the situation, said he's on infected fescue pastures, that's probably a huge contributing factor to that. So, you know, you have to take that into account as well.
I wanted to make one comment on the trend thing, because I think that's extremely important. Everybody needs to remember that 1 year doesn't make a trend, because I think we jump on that bandwagon way too often. We have one of the feed out programs in our state where we send the cattle out and all. And we have producers that will send cattle out, get 1 year's data back, you know, and want to revamp the whole herd. And we can't do that. I mean, I think it takes a considerable number of cattle that you feed from your herd before you can actually make some true breeding decisions that you need to change, because it's so volatile from one year to the other. Cost of gain, that issue, well, that's so dependent on corn prices, for one thing. You know, looking at trends there is extremely difficult. So be sure that when you're looking at trends, that you have enough data over a long enough period of time, and that it's a trait that means something. I mean, such as feed efficiency and things like that certainly do mean something. Cost of gains and all, that's a whole different ball game.
Well, I'm sure the seed stock producers in here are loving this, right? I mean, we got a lot of opinions in here. It looks like we're going to have a hell of a sale. Sir, back there. Yeah, if you look at the replacement rate, we're running a little over 20% in this herd. What do y'all think the average on replacement rate is? I don't know if you look at the CHAPS data that Chris Ringwald puts out from North Dakota, and I know we've looked at it in our state, 18 to 19% is pretty average replacement rate. So we're a little bit over that in this particular herd. That wasn't one of our scoring tool items, but I don't disagree. It needs to be shored up at all possible. Wait up and let Mark get you the mic.
I assume what you're trying to say there then is that the 50 to 60% retention is a selection pool.
Sure, you bet.
Dale, you made mention that the seed stock guys are loving this, and I think I'd bring out one little thing that I maybe don't love. When you look at this scenario, I mean, these tools and this information is critical, but you're going to come to me or Ben or Lori or anybody in this room, and you're going to expect me and my bull to correct your 70% calving in the first 42 days. And so, you know, Dr. Stuck, I know you're only a veterinarian. I tell my wife that, too. That went over big. But, you know, these bulls are fertile. They pass the test. If they're not cycling, and they're not, I mean, nothing that any bull can do if an animal's not going to, you know, come into heat. So I guess my point is, and Norm made a very good comment, here we are on Indofight, and you guys from the West, we don't really know what Indofight infected fescue is. I think the first thing that this herd ought to consider doing is shifting their calving season. You know, I don't pretend that I know a lot about fescue, but I have a lot of customers that do. Okay, it looks to me with their breeding and their calving, what was it, February 1st or February 20th something to May 1st, okay, they're going to be breeding on what I understand would be the worst time, Dr. Stucka, for fescue. So to improve that calving interval, I think you're going to, wherever you are, whether you're in Texas or Alaska, you've got to match your cow herd to your feed stuff. Okay. And no seed stock guy can fix that for you until you fit within your environment.
Okay. Now we have to educate our Western friends once again. he is correct about that. That's the worst time of year to be breeding with fescue. But you have to remember, I know that for a lot of you, this isn't very cold down here. If you were here last week, though, it was. And so that's the other side of what we're battling against. We also get precipitation over here away from the Rockies. precipitation this time of year is a bad thing on a baby calf. And so we're battling two deals when we're here in the fescue belt. We're battling the cold, wet weather winter for having those calves on one end, getting the cows bred on the other end. So it's a fine line. Feel very sorry for us, because it's a tough situation.
Of course, there's always solutions to that, and Mark, you know, the primary one, John Johns, is here and probably does as much in fescue work as anybody in the Southeast, but the solution to pollution is dilution, and when you talk about the fescue thing, you know, there's other ways to combat that rather than changing the calving season. The interesting thing that y'all don't know about this case is this herd, when we started him on SPA in about '93, his costs were in excess of $500 a cow, and we've got him down in 1998. He was like $314 or something like that. And he's been moving the calving season the opposite way you're talking about. And that is to bring down the winter feed costs and go more to a grazing program on trying to get to year-round. So there's more ways to solve it. Now, maybe he slipped on calving season, but his costs are coming way down, and that's what it's all about, too. And we're getting way off of genetics and bull selection here. But that is the reality of the situation that y'all are working in, and I understand that. And that's the nice part about these. When you really start getting this data put together, you start to find out not only do we have some genetic things that we have to look at, but we've got to analyze how that fits into the grand scheme of a system and a production system. And that's what a lot of the data helps show on this. Mark, I know you wanted to make a comment. Go ahead.
Well, being from the West, I do have to keep it simple there. And my point always is, I mean, you get this information, and then you can make better decisions. I don't pretend, I'm not the seed stock guy going to tell you when to calve, when it may be, but you take this information, and then you go from there. Let's pick some bulls, because we're in a genetics for cowboys, so... You know, job one, we've decided, okay, we're going to try to match reproduction with our feedstuffs, however that best is for that area.
Okay,
we've had this.
We're going to have some differences of opinion.
Yes, we are.
Huh?
Who would like to?
I'm guessing these guys over here, a couple of them, they're going to have some different bulls that they want to select.
Let's start hearing who the best bulls are, and then we'll discuss those. So, I mean, and, you know, we're having a bull sale, so we need a lot of best bulls. I had a comment from the back of the room, Donnie, and I just need to check this. It says, Angus Charlotte bulls have been used in this operation. Okay? So those crossbred Angus Charlottes, and the comment was made, could those cows function? That's an inside joke, and he's not laughing very much. So so I was just bringing that up. And the other comment that I got, especially in the breed of cattle that I work with, they said, Mark, the bulls you picked for calving these bulls were all red and horned. And I said, I can fix that. But the true answer to that is that you're looking at your seed stock source. We have a narrow source. I mean, I personally don't care what color they are. And John, we just got through all that, didn't we? But anyway, that's why you want a wide selection. I think you've got a lot more to select from in this scenario to improve some growth traits, to improve some carcass traits, and hopefully, you know, maintain calving ease, so to speak, to where we're not going to kill any cows. But I want to hear what you have to say. So let's start picking some bulls.
Anybody?
Volunteer. Dr. Stutter.
Actually, I'm not going to rebut much at all. It's just that what we're dealing with here is kind of two different scenarios. We have a cow factory that we as cow-calf producers have to be extremely conscientious about. If we do something to screw up the cow factory and our breeding programs, then we're not going to be in business very long. Okay? The carcass thing can kind of take care of itself as long as you pay attention to it. So with that in mind, I'll just put my choice out here. Okay, this bull number 9, actually, lot number 9, is probably not all bad. Okay, there's some things I don't like about it, but there's some things I like. I think this herd still has too many calving problems. I would like to do something about that. But I'm looking at a bull that's going to increase carcass weight, ribeye area, and I'm still not sure what this grade merits score really means, okay? But what I'm trying not to do is hurt my cow factory and yet improve the saleable product that I have, the red meat yield here. I'm not sure I'm chasing marbling with this type of breed conformation. I'm chasing red meat yield, okay?
That's a good point on which grid we're chasing, and we actually left that wide open for you guys, because that's the thing about it. There's so many grids out there. You have to kind of it's probably best to find the grid that fits your cattle as opposed to trying to breed your cattle to fit a particular grid, because there are a lot of different grids out there. So that's a good point. Whichever grid you choose, just breed towards what's bringing you in the dollars from that particular grid. Got another.
He's dying.
Yeah.
He's going.
Probably shouldn't be doing this.
might not get out of the room. All right, I picked lot 22, and I picked it for calving ease. Thought that would help him. Yearling weight, weaning weight, milk was about average. I liked the marbling score on it. That was higher, and the GM was quite high. I felt he needed help there. As far as I was concerned, in his five-year average, as you look at that, as far as his quality grade, he did real good in two or three of the years, but he fell way back last year, or the last year he had on the thing. I didn't know whether maybe he changed bulls at that time or whatever happened, but the ones that graded select were quite a bit higher than other years. So we don't know that if he was using the same bull for those 4 or 5 years. I think he must have made some kind of change there.
I think that's a great point that we all have to consider. You know, again, I'm making excuses for the seed stock guys, but how are you going to know where you're going if you don't know where you've been? And so I think it's very important, whatever breed of cattle that you're working with, that you benchmark not only this actual data all the way through, but you benchmark your genetics. And, you know, don't just tell your seed stock guy, I really don't need that paper, I'm just a commercial guy, because you need that.
Right. So to expand on that, what would help you in relationship to some additional information on this? It would be nice, wouldn't it, if this carcass data was now sorted by sire or by breed type? Huh? That would help a lot, wouldn't it? Sure it would. And so I think that's what Mark's getting at. You know, we get the data in this position where this herd has it. Now the next step is, how do you look at the next step? And then, of course, there's some problems that exist when you try to analyze across years and everything else, and you know how all that goes. But getting that as the next step, I think, would help in analyzing what if we have some, maybe we've got some cattle that are three-quarters of one breed that had a real high influence that last year, and that caused that data to slip. And that would help us, wouldn't it? Okay?
Another thing that I think should be looked at in this herd is the calving difficulty of the heifers. It tended to be somewhat high. And from that aspect, I'm looking at calving ease for daughters. And in bull 22, it's not very good for that. So personally, I'd have kicked that bull out for that reason.
Okay. Comment back there? Just a
yeah, we picked bull number 16, and after some of the discussion, we still think he's a pretty good average kind of bull that will help us. Stability was important to us. Fertility, trying to pull together that calving ease interval. So he's got a good scrotal circumference EPD. He's on the top 10% of weaning, the top 30% of yearling. He's got calving ease. We thought he'd do a best job for us.
Okay, so we're going to be able to get him cheap, too, because nobody's bidding against us.
Very important. Larry, I think right here had a comment. Use the mic, Larry.
Are we looking at two bulls? We're looking at a heifer bull and a
no,
cow bull.
No. Hopefully you heard the comment, but all the heifers are being bred to Angus bulls, and you don't have any in the catalog. So,
All right.
So, yeah, you're not having to worry about a bull for use on heifers in this particular situation.
Okay.
Who else has got a burning one? Way over there. Can you get to him, Mark? Thank you.
Okay, I guess from our perspective over here, and one of our crews already alluded to that, but we felt like the most severe issue as far as affecting total profitability, the whole thing, and everything that everybody's talked about is sure important, but we feel like we've got to do whatever it takes to get these younger females bred back earlier. We think we're giving up way too much opportunity for gain. You know, we talk about gain in the feedlot, but in a lot of cases we're giving up 30, 40 days of life in that calf. If somebody's got that calving interval of from February 28th to May 1st, is that right? He's probably weaning everything about the same time, too. Mm-hmm. And I know we're making some assumptions there, but it's, you know, I doubt if he's going out there and pulling two or three calves whenever they hit 210 days. So with that in mind, he's given up an awful lot of age in those cattle going into his feeding phase, and we think we'll help correct some of those issues that everyone's brought up there, too. And because of that,
I guess I tended to look at things that I thought would have a positive influence in those females, and I guess I'll agree with the veterinarian back here a little bit. We think that managing that cow herd genetics over time, we don't think you can get that done with one selection, one bull. This ranch is going to get to see us year after year buying bulls that are going to affect females, and hopefully over the course of time, we'll have a female battery that has some of these reproductive enhancements that we're looking for. That's the reason we want to keep our own replacements.
Okay, with those qualifications, what bull or two are you looking
23
at?
23. Because 23. Of the scrotal circumference, calving ease on the daughters. We thought those things were really going to help give us some females we're going to try to breed back quicker.
And you can buy my bull.
And besides that, he's black and polled, and that's not going to hurt when you sell those fat cattle, too.
Okay.
So.
Anybody else find 23? Hey,
we have now found the highest selling bull of this sale.
No, I doubt that.
Oh, okay.
John, what was your comment?
Yep. The comment was made, and it's right. This bull is in the bottom 10% of this breed for stayability.
Okay, now we got one of the experts here on these EPDs from that association. Don, how heritable is stayability? Especially, and we're looking at a young bull here. Give us opinion here.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is you have to use the information you have, and if you have it, you use it. But to pretend like a minus one versus a plus four is the difference in your entire bull selection, to me, is borderline insane. I think you have to keep that perspective. That's keep in mind, the only ones that get stayability are animals that have to have daughters in production that are six or greater. So most young bulls, it's actually hard to get a stayability EPD on them.
Right.
I'd like
it'd be a pedigree estimate,
exactly.
Attack, right, Don?
Yeah. And on a fairly lowly heritable trait.
Right.
The perspective I would take on this, and I heard the discussion, I thought it's been interesting, is that as I evaluated this operation, it sounded like everybody evaluated them as being like the world's worst cow-calf group. And I evaluated, saying, this guy's doing a lot of things pretty right. He's got his breeds pretty close to right. He's collecting carcass data. He's doing a number of things extremely right. Everybody has jumped on to him regarding his feedlot performance, and I don't know the particular situation, but what if this guy's feeding a lot of byproducts in his ration? You know his cost of gain could be incredibly cheap, his average daily gain might be not as good as you'd like, and his conversion might be not very well, but give this guy a little bit of credit. I think he's doing most things pretty doggone right. And so I would take a different route, and just so that you know what the Gelby guy thought. I lined up much different bulls. My scenario in this particular example would say I'm probably going to keep most of my replacement heifers out of my first calf heifers because we're using Angus on those first calf heifers, so we're ensuring some calving ease in there. And I would go with more of a bull like number 4, 30, or 27.
At 27.
4.
Gardner and I agree, so I have to rethink what I'm talking about.
Oh, my. That's blasphemy.
We agreed on that Angus thing.
Just to share our input here, and I don't know if we're right either, but I guess there's a lot of good comments. But we ended up picking and working on four bulls, and I had a lot of respect for Don's comments here as well. But we started off with selecting number 30, feel like we had the most economic traits there, followed by number 4, and looked even at 22 and 18, but... We felt it's kind of dangerous sometimes to wait to the last bull to sale, but I think we'll go for number 3.
Well, you don't know what the sale order is, so I, you know.
All right.
Did anybody pick? I've heard a lot of good comments, and I think that's what information generates. And if your supplier doesn't give you this kind of information, and Donnie made a lot of great points, it's about net profit. It's not how big my premium is or all that. But did anybody pick lot 13 or 19? Okay? And I've heard the comment here, and I'm not criticizing, I'm just asking you to think about some things. Those cattle have no carcass projections. Okay? They have no carcass projections. And you know, here we are in Tennessee, and, you know, I sell them at the auction, I sell them at such and such age, and I don't really care what their end product is. I think we as an industry have to change that mindset. Would you go to the pharmacy and buy medicine without a label on it? Okay? It might kill you. Well, you know, as we get into these, and we're talking about hitting grids and hitting various targets, how can you hit those targets if you don't know, have any idea at all what the projections are. So the first thing I did in my scenario, whether I was going to retain ownership or not, is those bulls are out because I don't know where they rank anywhere in this breed.
I think they must agree, Mark. That's amazing.
I'm not going to argue with Mark on that, but I wanted to make one other comment. On those of you that were keeping back your replacements, now I know Donnie said that he wasn't, and so he's off the hook here. Was there anybody that was concerned with those bulls that you picked that had the pretty high yearling weights with mature cow size? You know, I picked on Angus for not having the calving ease. Well, Gelby doesn't have a mature size EPD, so your best indicator now is going to be that yearling weight EPD. Anybody concerned that they're getting their cows too big?
Yeah, we was. That's why I was breeding.
Just something else to think on.
In our country, a good bull is one that comes back in the fall, July.
Now, is that due to alligators or lions or what? That's very good. And we have a little problem with that in places. That's right. Any other bull selection opinions out here that we ought to hear before?
I think
one comment I guess I'd make in relationship to Don's comment concerning, you know, how the cattle are gaining. A 63 megacal finishing diet, that's a fairly high concentrate diet. I mean, we're pushing these cattle pretty darn hard. In at least for Iowa. Now you go to the Southwest feedlots, that's maybe not quite as hot as some of those folks feed, but a 63 megacal diet is flat cranking them in Iowa. Jeff Pasteur from Land O'Lakes farmland back there, I think he would agree with me, that's a pretty hot finishing ration for our folks. So that's not a problem. With a 2.7 gain on the average, that's less than desirable. And I guess the other comment that I'd make is I looked at this situation. I've been through this one many times, all right? So I about know this guy inside out anymore. But I agreed with what Dave had to say. His end product sale, that's not very good. 686-pound carcass weight on the average. That's not very good. And in this day and age, we still have to generate cash flow. And you heard these people talk about one of their problems. They'd like to improve the cash flow generation of this herd. And with 686-pound average carcass weight, that is a problem. And quite honestly, that's one of the reasons they wanted to go to Gelby Bulls on this set of cows, to see if they could crank up their end product weight and get more dollars generated.
Dale, would I be able to select for that, in your opinion, better with growth traits or with the carcass weight EPD?
My opinion? You asked him my opinion.
Well, yes. You haven't got picked on
I think we got 1 minute. I don't know if you want my opinion on that. But I have difficulty of using carcass weight in yearling bulls, mainly because we don't have much data on those, so it's probably a pedigree estimate. So I would tend to go with yearling weight, Mark, mainly because we have more data. I think we have a little higher accuracy as it relates to that trait. So I'd go that route, and, you know, Dare probably disagree.
He asked that question because he knows that Dale and I disagree on that one. and Mark's a stirrer. I'll leave it at that. My opinion is you go with the trait that you're shooting for, and I agree that you're going to have a lot more accuracy with yearling weight, but the other thing you have to consider is that that's a correlated trait. And so in the EPD calculations, the yearling weight aspect is going to be factored in,
true,
particularly on those pedigree estimates for carcass weight. So in my opinion, you go the other way. You use the EPD for the trait that you are selecting for.
That work on birth weight, too?
Work on birth weight, too. With calving ease, or?
Well, I'm just asking something. Correlation?
Yes. Yeah, certainly. I mean, most all your growth traits are correlated together. As you know, we're always trying to look for those curve benders that where you're going to, in my opinion, have a little. If I'm selling on carcass weight, then I would actually want to lower, if it worked out that way, a lower yearling weight one, to, since that's tied with my mature size, you know, get a lot of carcass weight. Now it just doesn't work that way so well. So we're always looking for the little birth weight, big at the end.
One quick comment here, and Melanie's giving me the high sign here, so we're going to have to cut this off, but let's have Norm give give a couple opinions here,
just,
and then we're going to end.
Just one quick question. If, as I understand it, yearling wage is probably, though, EPD is going to be the most closely related to
on the table.
Post-weaning average daily gain, which
did they pick them up?
Was kind of the consensus of the group that we need to improve. So yearling weight plus the carcass weight are still two things that needs to look at in this herd.
Yes, I mean, that is going to be, that is the closest correlated to post-weaning gain is going to be the yearling weight. But you have to remember, there's always consequences. The consequence is bigger mature cows.
Well, we hope that you've had a little fun here without a bunch of talking heads. You've got to do some homework. The take home on this is, obviously, having the information on your own herd and sitting down and critically evaluate what the problems are is really paramount to going in and trying to select bulls or seed stock that will help shore up that problem. Now, a little homework before y'all go. Hopefully you picked up an evaluation sheet, and every year Pfizer and NCBA like to make these better if they can. So please fill out how this session went in your opinion, and either leave it on the table, Melanie.
Can you stick on the table outside the front?
Leave them on the table on the outside of the door. Folks, there's another session that starts in here. It's PR 103 at 9:30. So thank you for attending. We really appreciate it. Hopefully you had a little fun. Thank you.